Welcome back to Leading with Grace, Grit, and Greatness. Don't miss a second of this show or any other Now Media television favorite.
To Leading with Grace, Grit, and Greatness, where leadership meets humanity and where we explore what it really takes to lead with courage, compassion, and conviction. I'm your host, Nikita Poindexter, and today I am so honored to welcome a leader whose work sits at the intersection of community systems and long-term impact. Join me today and welcome Vicar Grego, President of WELL. His work speaks to something very strong. Every strong leader must eventually confront. How do we build systems that truly serve people, especially in places where access, equity, and dignity matters most? Today, we're going to be talking about water, leadership, responsibility, and what it takes to move from awareness to action. I want to open up this hour by really wanting you to understand that this conversation matters way beyond infrastructure. This is about leadership now, the leadership that sees people, understands systems, and takes responsibility in building solutions that last. So, Victor, welcome to Leading with Grace, Grit, and Greatness.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So let's just jump right into this. When we think about water, I think about survival. But when you hear it as a leader, what does that represent to you?
I think of equity. I think water should be thought of as a common, not a commodity, meaning water is and should be available to everyone, just like air is. But in many societies, it is a commodity. It is traded. It is sold. It is hoarded, it's contaminated, and it's unavailable. And so when I hear the word water, I think of equity.
So that's interesting, because I think the average person would be like, wait, what does water have to do with leadership? And so, you know, thank you for kind of connecting it. What first pulled you into this work, and when did it become personal instead of just professional?
So I got into the work because of my daughter. I had always wanted to work with my father. I was unable to do that. He had a brain tumor, which eventually led to a suicide. He was schizophrenic. He was paranoid. So I was never able to work with him, but I always had that in the back of my mind. And so when I was ready to end my public career in the work that I was doing at the time and thinking about retirement and what was I going to do, I thought of my daughter, and I thought, well, what is she interested in? You know, when we think of the young people, we think of the future. And so I asked her, I said, Mija, what are you going to do with your environmental science major? And she said, Dad, water. Water is critical in California. And I didn't know much about water. And so I spent about a year traveling around California to learn about water, to understand the challenges. And more importantly, to see what Latinos were doing in water. And I found out that Latinos only made up 14% of the leadership in the jobs of executive leaders, elected water board, and yet Latinos are 42% of the population. Women are 50% of the population and only make up 26% of the C-suite and elected positions in California. Other minorities didn't fare as well. So I realized that providing work in that field would be something that would be satisfying and would be make a significant impact. So 14 years ago, I brought together some very experienced water professionals and asked them, what can we do? And we decided to work on education and training. Our organization doesn't advocate. We don't support policies or programs. We develop people. So that's how I got started.
Oh, sounds good. So it's always good to, you know, work with your kiddos, right? So you talked about underrepresented communities and people and everything like that. So when a system has underserved people for a long time, where do you believe that the real leadership has to begin? Like, where does it start?
Education. I think when you want to change things, you have to know not only what the problem is, but what caused it and how do you change that condition. Many times we see service organizations dealing with the symptoms like poverty. So they'll provide food. Poverty, they'll provide subsidized housing. Medical, you know, lack of medical care, they'll provide vans. So when I see a system problem in water, well, what caused the problem and how do you prevent it from happening again? So you don't treat the symptom, you solve the origin of the problem.
Sure. So, you know, Victor, why in your particular experience, right? You know, why do you think too many leaders misunderstand the connection between water equity and community well-being? I mean, you know, I think I said previously that, you know, when we hear about water and leadership, it's like, okay, how are the two connected? And I don't think many people really understand that until you kind of talked a little bit more about your own personal experience with your daughter. But how, you know, what do we need to do, or why do you think leaders are so don't understand about the connection between the three, water, equity, and community well-being?
Well, it's very similar to air. You know, we take air for granted. We breathe. I don't know how many times a minute. Water, we drink water throughout the day. In advanced communities, we have it available, we have it affordable. And so it depends on what, you know, what leader and what community you're talking about. In economic challenged countries, water is a big issue. And so they talk about it a lot. In California, in the Central Valley, they talk about it a lot because of agriculture. Water is a huge issue in Sacramento. I mean, in the Central Valley. In the urban areas like Southern California, for the most part, water is not an issue. Every now and then you'll hear of a drought or the contamination. And so if it's not a problem, the leadership is not going to address it. In a lot of communities where water isn't a problem, they're more concerned, and rightfully so, about affordability, housing, healthcare, education, job development. And so when large industrial communities have access to water, they don't think it's a problem until it is a problem. And so I think that's a big reason why the leadership isn't working as constantly on water policy. It's only when it becomes a problem. So it's only when it's a drought, when the prices have to be, the rates have to be increased, or there's contamination and people can't drink the water. So that doesn't happen all the time. It only happens in crisis. And we're seeing it more and more now in California with climate change. That impacts the Colorado River. It impacts the Featherweather up north, where Southern California gets a lot of its water. But if it's not a problem, political leadership doesn't address it. Most leaders address two things. They address crises and important issues. And if it's not a crisis, then it's got to be important. But most of the time, they spend most of their effort and energy on crisis.
Piggyback off what you said, a crisis they have to deal with because it's a crisis. The others, well, okay, that's kind of, you know, depending upon the individual and what's quote unquote important to them. We oftentimes hear about, you know, water when they're, like you said, when there's a shortage, or, oh, make sure you turn the water off. Oh, don't waste water. You know, this, that, and the other. We heard a lot about water in January when, you know, it felt like the whole state of California was on fire and there were a lack of resources to be able to deal with that. So I can definitely understand that. What has this mission taught you about the difference between managing the problem and truly serving the people?
I'm sorry, say it again, Vinya.
What has your mission particularly taught you about, you know, what's the difference between managing the problem and truly serving the people? Because we talked about crises, but what's your particular mission that has taught you about the difference between the two?
Well, I believe that that managing the problem is a specific issue that day. So whether it's a broken pipe, contamination, lack of water because of a drought, they're dealing with that then and there. A true leader, and I shouldn't criticize the leader that deals with the crisis. I think people want leadership to deal with crisis, but to have the long-term vision, it's preparing for the future. So it's very similar to a family, right? your child gets sick, you need to provide health care, you have savings, you've got to spend it. Some people will say, well, don't put it on your credit card, don't take out a loan because this, that, or the other. And you're like, well, do I take care of my child today or do I put away money for the college education? That's kind of the rub, right? It's the rub. So the crisis is the healthcare of a child versus the long-term well-being of that child. So most of the time, parents are going to take care of the crisis, and rightfully so. And so when the child now becomes 18 years old and there's no money for the college education, they're like, well, I had to make sure that you survived. And so that's why I was paying the doctor bills and this and that. So that's very similar to what happens with water. A lot of these elected officials have to deal with the crisis. And so if you have an economic disadvantaged community, do you raise the rates? And some people say, no, you can't raise the rates. And so, well, if we don't raise the rates, we're not going to fix the pumps and the pipes. And in 5 years, they're going to break. Well, that might be the case, but people can't afford to increase the rates. Well, so then, so do you deal with the crisis or are you dealing with long-term? So that's the issue of leadership. How do you balance that?
That's really good. So listen, this is already showing us that leadership is not just about overseeing outcomes. It's really about understanding what people live through inside the systems that we often take for granted. Up next, I'm going to take a deeper dive with Victor into what it takes to challenge these broken systems and lead with a meaningful change with both grit, grace, and greatness. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Leading with Grace, Grit, and Greatness. I'm Akita Poindexter, the host. Stay connected to this show and every Now Media TV favorite, live or on demand, anytime you like, anywhere you like. Download the free Now Media TV app on Roku, iOS, and unlock nonstop bilingual programming, both in English and Spanish. On the move, catch the podcast at nowmedia.tv. So welcome back. I want to just make sure that you clearly know who I'm talking to. I am talking with Victor Grego, president of Well. We're talking about what it means to lead in spaces where the stakes are extremely high, where systems are complex and the people impacted cannot afford delay, indifference, or performative solutions. We're talking about real solutions. So I want to shift the conversation into the tension of leadership and what it takes to confront resistance, because I think what you said, Victor, was very crucial. We talk about managing systems or situations, I like to say, either from a crisis perspective when we're talking about leadership and or what's important to them at that particular time. But how do we really confront resistance, navigate it, and navigate institutional barriers that keep people at the center of the conversation while we're really, truly pushing for real change? So when I think about trying to change a broken system, I know resistance shows up quickly, right? No, some people just don't like change, especially when we talk about leadership. Where does resistance usually show up in your world outside of from the political advocacy perspective?
Money. Money's always the issue. When it comes to public work, is there enough money for healthcare? Is there enough money for education? Is there enough money for war? Is there enough money for water? Is there enough money for energy? So, yeah, it's always about money. It's about resources. And so do poor people get access to water? Do poor people get access to healthcare? And how easy is it for the government to suspend billions and billions of dollars in a war all over the world, and yet we have poverty in the country? So, yeah, the tension is about money. It's about resources. And in California, there are examples not very far from where you are in Coachella, where people live in trailer camps and they don't have clean water. They have contaminated water, chrome 6, nitrate, arsenic in their water, in their drinking water. And so they can't take a shower. They got to bring in bottled water. That's a resource. That's a choice that the government makes. So, for example, in Coachella, there's communities that don't have water. They have water for agriculture and the workers are living next to that agricultural land. But where they live, there's no potable water. The pipes are for the agriculture, not for where the people live. That's an economic decision. People are saying, no, we have to have water for the agriculture, but we're not going to run a potable line of water to where people live. So it comes down to resources, money.
Yeah, but not only do they need water, they need clean water. They need water that doesn't have all the contaminants and all the pollutions and stuff like that. Because now, just having water, but having the wrong water now increases more health challenges which creates another, you know, barrier or challenge, because now you're talking about medical and we've already talked about our broken healthcare system. So don't, you know, that's kind of dear to my heart. Go ahead.
That's right. And see, and so it's about resources / money, but then it's about power. So for example, in Southeast LA County, you have two cities. You got a city of Maywood and the city of Pico Rivera. Both Latino communities, by the way, but Pico Rivera is a well-heeled, so it's very middle-income community, and Maywood is a very immigrant, low-income, working-class community. They both have a contaminant called PFAS. They both cities have wells of water, and they have this contaminant called PFAS. Well, it's being addressed in Pico Rivera. It's not being addressed in Maywood. And why? It's because access to power. There's more money in Pico Rivera. There's better political representation in Pico Rivera. And there's less so in the city of Maywood. So the city of Maywood can't get the resources from Congress, from the state, and from water agencies. And so they don't have that resource to take care of their contaminated water wells. So
it's I tell people all the time. No, go ahead, Victor. I'm sorry.
So it's very simple to say money, but it's do you have power to get the money? You know, can you get the money from the government?
Yeah, that's a whole nother show that we could do, right?
Yeah, you know, I'll give you another example. I'll give you another example. We're all familiar with the Ninth Ward, the Lower Ninth in Louisiana and Katrina. And we also are familiar with Paradise here in California. They had the fire about 5-6 years ago. I visited Paradise about 2 years ago, and it's about 80% back. 80% of the town is back. I was in New Orleans when Katrina hit. My wife and I were there. That was 20 years ago. I was back there about 6 years ago. It was not rebuilt. Now, what's the difference between those two communities? Why does one get rebuilt and the other doesn't get rebuilt? It's power. It's access to resources. It's money. So that's a challenge in any public policy issue, money and power.
I know I get frustrated when we're trying to implement change for the better for, you know, individuals that are lacking access to, you know, just some basic essentials. How do you not get discouraged or frustrated when we know things need to change, the mission is urgent, but the pace is painfully slow?
Well, you know, change is always slow unless it's fast. And you have to be ready for both. Some change is going to take forever and some will happen right away. And you've got to be ready for both. And in this kind of work, you don't give up. You let the opposition give up. You know, working people have never given up in this country. They haven't given up in the world. And so until we get equity, until we get access to healthcare, education, jobs, decent housing, you can't give up. You just got to, because you know the money's there. I mean, you know there's billionaires all over the world. So the access to them is the challenge. And so you just keep doing the work.
So, but what do we do, Victor? What do we do? And how, you know, what does accountability look like when leaders say they care about community impact, but their decisions don't reflect that?
You get them out of office. I mean, it's as simple as that. If the political leadership is not accountable to people, then the people deserve their leadership. They deserve their representation. And so they've got to make sure that the representatives do what they need them to do. And if not, they get them out of office. I mean, look what happened to Gray Davis here in California about 25 years ago. He increased the driver's license fee for automobiles in California. People didn't like it. They booted him out. So the beauty about democracy is if you don't like the representation, you can vote. Now, you know, many people don't, and they sit back and they let things happen, and shame on them. But it takes leadership to change that, new leadership. So if the bad leadership is doing things that aren't good for the community, then new leadership needs to come up and challenge it. It's like in the Bible. You know, you had kings and you had prophets. And if the king wasn't doing things right, the prophets would come and tell the king, well, you know, if you don't watch out, king, the people are going to come up and they're going to, you know, make things really bad for you. So the kings would listen to the prophets. And the same thing here. If the government isn't doing the right thing, then new leadership will come and they'll get rid of that bad leadership, bad people in power.
So, you know, you and I are on the same accord. So here, I want to make sure we get back to our conversation before we go to commercial break. But for me, I just wish we can focus on policy and not party, right? Let's focus on what are the issues that we really need to be able to do to address the challenges that we have, whether it's in our communities, our county, our state, nationally, instead of just fighting over stuff that's trivial and inconsequential. We really need to just come together, sit down, have a seat at the table, and have conversations about the policies that's impacting people regarding water and healthcare and job stability, this, that, and the other. I just need to throw that in there. So let me just ask you this question before we jump into a commercial. Tell me about the moments you've had to choose between what was easy politically and what was right morally.
I don't understand the question. Say it again.
So tell me about a time that you had to choose between something that was politically versus something that was easy to say, okay, you know, I kind of agree, but morally didn't kind of set right with you.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'd want to believe that I've never had to make that choice, because I think politics is based on people's values. And so your political decisions and your leadership decisions are based on values. And so I'd like to believe that all decisions that I've made over the years have been based on values and morals that I carry as a human being. But if I try to answer that question to what you're trying to say, was there conflict? Was there tension? I got to believe there might have been, or there were. I just really can't think of one particular time where I had to make a choice. I mean, the only thing I could say would be more of a management, where I did receive a $25,000 check from a vendor that a client, and I turned it back. And one of my employees said, well, they would have never known. And I said, that's probably true, but you would have known. And so it was an act of leadership with my own employee about whether we should keep the money or not. It was a big corporation. They probably wouldn't have found out about it. But I knew that this person was looking at me to make that decision. So I would think that's probably the closest thing that comes to mind right now.
And that's exactly what I was looking for. I wasn't talking about from a political, like a policy or advocacy perspective, just, you know, something that you had to say. What I appreciate about this particular conversation is a reminder that strong leadership is not sterile. It is moral, it's relational, and it's awfully deeply tested. After this break, I want to explore what sustainable leadership looks like when the goal is not just fixing today's problem, but shaping a healthier future. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Bikita Poindexter, and this conversation with Victor Grego is reminding me that visionary leadership is not only about solving immediate challenges, it's about building systems, trust, and momentum that can outlast a single moment, a single leader, or a single crisis. As we move the audience into a future-facing side of leadership, legacy, and stewardship, trust building, and the discipline required to create change that lasts. So, Victor, when we think about the future of your work that you're doing, what kind of impact do you want communities to actually feel in their daily lives? Now, I know you're going to say water, right, and access to water, but take that a little deeper for me.
Well, I would feel that I would hope that they feel empowered to change things on their own, that they have the confidence that they can ask why things are happening. So in their community, if their neighborhood is experiencing, you know, many robberies or children getting hit by cars or whatever the community issue or challenges, that they have the confidence to go to the mayor, to go to the school board, to go wherever the entity is, to figure out who's in charge, why is it happening, and how it can be solved. So that the people do have the confidence to ask the right questions, to keep power accountable, And most importantly, to go and get other people involved, because one person by themselves, it's like when I started my organization, I didn't know anything about water. I knew nothing about water, but I care deeply about people. And I know water is a big part of people's lives. So I knew I had a role if I really cared. So I would hope that people, when they leave the work that we're doing with them, that they care enough and they have the confidence to ask questions. They have the confidence and the energy to go get other people involved, because you can't do it by yourself. Yes, one person can make a difference, and one person makes a difference all the time, but it always is better with other people.
Agree. I firmly believe that. You know, you said this in one of our earlier segments, that education is power. Like, it's, you know, without it, people perish. And so as you're going through the particular process, you know, really staying educated, or trying to get the education that will help them to be comfortable and going to advocate on behalf of, you know, systems that are broken. And speaking onto that particular subject, right, we're talking about communities that have every reason to feel skeptical, right? They are skeptical about institutions, elected officials, the leaderships, whether or not just in you know, talking about, you know, water and having access to it, but just in general, how do we help individuals overcome that particular obstacle?
People need to understand their self-interest. Many times people don't act on the self-interest. We eat the wrong things. We drink the wrong things. We don't exercise enough. Those are very basic self-interest activities that human beings do not do, let alone drive too fast, not sleep enough, hang out with the wrong people. We do a lot of things against our self-interest. For real change to be done by people, they need to understand their self-interest. And I'm not talking about selfishness. I'm talking about self-interest where their future is aligned with other people's interest. And that's how we define in my organization self-interest. It's not just an individual interest. Your self-interest is other people's. In the Greek definition of self-interest, it's among others. So your interest is aligned to other people's interests. And that's how I see it happening.
Now, when I am talking to, you know, the next generation, right, I'm often telling them, and I'll just say, you know, the millennials on down, I think Gen X's and baby boomers have kind of got this figured out to a certain degree. You got to turn off that radio station, you know, WISN, what's in it for me, right? And you need to really be focused on what can you do to better somebody else's life? How can you help educate somebody to be able to make change that's going to be lasting, not change that's just going to be in the moment, but change that's going to be lasting. That's where legacy comes into the piece. And so when we think about, you know, the next generation of leadership, you know, what do you think we need for them to be stronger, healthier, to create these more equitable systems that we're talking about?
Well, it's a good question. Two things. The work of leadership is, as you said earlier, is relational. This generation is very fortunate. And by the way, I have tremendous confidence in this generation. I think they're going to do wonderful things for themselves, for the families, for the communities, and for the world. You see that. You see technology. You see how we're evolving with new technology. I mean, I think as a government, as a society, we have to put barriers for technology. We got to make sure that it works. You've got to focus on AI and make sure that it's done the right way. Just like an automobile, if you're going to drive an automobile, you can't be driving 120 miles an hour. You've got to do it the right way. You got to drive an automobile within the speed limits, et cetera. So technology has brought about tremendous change in our world. But I read this article about technology, and I come to believe that technology has allowed this generation, and probably all society, to be more connected, you know, with social media and television and streaming. We're able to access information. We're able to communicate with people. And so the new technology is allowing people to be more connected, but they're less committed. And what I mean by that is, well, yes, you can do a like on Facebook. You could do, do a quick communication on the text. But the commitment to one another, that's what's missing. And so self-interest is not just charity to other people. I'm not talking about charity. I'm saying strategic relationships The reason you help your neighbor is so your neighbor can help you. The reason you get involved with the school is so that other people in the school can be helping your child and you help their child. It's a relational, leadership is relational. It's not about just one person doing and or serving other people to be nice and kind and get to heaven. No, it's survival. Where human beings are relational beings. We don't live alone. We live amongst each other. You have people who procreate, and we have mothers who fly back from Texas when their son says they're not feeling well. That's the human spirit that we have as human beings, that we are in relationship. And so that's what leadership is about, is understanding the self-interest of other people. It's in our interest. It's in my interest to know your interest, Vikita. It's in your interest to know my interest. That's how we got on this show together. You understand my interest. I understand interest, and we can get together. We didn't have coffee. We didn't have a meal. We didn't spend 3 hours talking about this, but you knew my interest. I know your interest. That's called mutual interest. Leadership is about knowing your people's interest. It's not having vision. Leadership isn't about vision. Leadership isn't about communications. Leadership is knowing what your people's interests are. It's not your interest. It's not your vision. It's knowing what people's interests are, what their needs are, what they're willing to do. And if you understand that, you can lead. Because not most people want to leave. They have an interest. They have a challenge. They have a problem. But they're not willing or they're not able to take the lead. And so the leader does the work for the people by understanding what the people's challenges are, what their interests are. But yet sometimes they, oh, you have to have a vision. You have to communicate. You have to this. No. Do you know what your people need? Do you know what your people want? Do you know what their challenges are? And that's what makes a good leader.
Ooh, that was so good. That was so good, Victor. Listen, I knew exactly what I was doing. I was like, I have to have him on the show so he can kind of talk about this. So speaking of that, where can people find you if they want more information or really want to understand the challenges that we kind of talked about or just get some guidance from you? Where can people find you?
Well, I have a website, Victor, an email. It's victorgriego.com. And my email is victor@victorgriego.com.
Sounds good. So listen, make sure that you reach out to Victor. Victor is a wealth of information and has so much wisdom. This is where we're talking about leadership, where it becomes legacy, not the title, not recognition, but what continues to serve people long after the spotlight moves on. So I really want to talk about legacy. So when we return, I'm going to close with personal leadership lessons behind every mission, the values, the convictions, and the inner discipline that makes this kind of work possible. Because let me tell you something, it is absolutely possible. You just gotta be willing to do the work. You gotta be willing to sacrifice yourself, right? And think about others before you think about yourself. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Leading with Grace, Grit, and Greatness. I'm Vikita Poindexter, the host. Stay connected to this show and every Now Media TV favorite, live or on demand, anytime you like, anywhere you like. Download the free Now Media TV app on Roku iOS and unlock nonstop bilingual programming in English and in Spanish. If you're on the move, listen, we've got something for you. Catch it on the podcast version on Now Media TV, nowmedia.tv. Let me make sure you got that right because I want you to get this podcast. Nowmedia.tv. Listen, Victor and I were just having conversations during the break and I need him to repeat what he just said about leadership. Victor, tell the audience what we just talked about. It was so good.
Well, I forgot what the question was, but we were talking about leadership as this podcast is titled. But we're saying is are leaders born or are leaders developed? I believe that leaders are developed. Now, everyone is born with certain traits, characteristics, interests. You know, what they're interested in doing. But Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Said when he was alive about leadership, he said that leadership is about serving people. And he says that everyone can serve people. Therefore, everyone can lead. So you don't have to be the president. You don't have to be the chairperson. You don't have to be, quote unquote, in charge. What you've got to do is you've got to lead. And he also said that you don't have to have a college degree. You just have to have a heart full of soul and love to be a leader, which means you've got to want to be for other people. And again, being for other people is in your interest. It's not like a benevolent thing. It's not charity. It's how people are made up. It's just that we don't act like that on a regular basis. So I believe that leadership is something everyone can do. And many times, again, leadership is not a position. It's not a title. Leadership is not a noun. Leadership is a verb. Leadership is action. It's not a title. It's not a position.
That is so good. You don't need a bachelor's degree. You need a heart degree. Listen, I'm going to make sure I take that. So I do. That was really, really good. I do want to spend our time as we get ready to close to talk about what every leader should understand before leadership is ever public. You know, you talked about it's personal. It shapes values. But what do we do when it's tested under pressure? That is where it really kind of, you know, the rubber meets the road, like we say, you know, our more mature generation says. This is where it clearly will be defined on the responsibility that we carry. And sometimes this work is hard. So what has this work demanded of you personally that people on the outside may never fully see?
Well, I think it goes back to one of your first questions, like what makes you do the work? What, you know, what's the personal part? I just met with a high school coach this morning for breakfast. And he was talking about all the wonderful things that he's done as a coach. He's won championships and he's been doing this for 10 years and this and that. And I was wondering, well, why? Why is he so good and how did he get into it? Well, we found out that his father was an immigrant from China and his father really fell in love with basketball and did everything he could to make this kid, you know, enjoy basketball and get into it. That's how this kid became this basketball coach and a very good basketball coach, because his father had this love and discipline for basketball. And this kid learned that from his father. And his mother was a healthcare worker, a social worker who served people all the time in the health field. And so this kid grows up in this environment that basketball is important. Basketball is a discipline. Basketball is something that he can do professionally. And his mother is like, no, life and work is about serving others. So he combined these two. And I think those type of experiences is what keeps you grounded when there's a crisis, what keeps you grounded when there's tension. And it's what you learn and what you observe as a young child of how the world works. And it's sort of mitigated by our parents. If you've got parents and, you know, both parents, whatever, but children are always looking up. And adults, we look down, right? And children look up and they look to the future. And so they learn how to mitigate situations, right? If they fall and the parents are screaming and yelling and thinking the world is falling apart, then that child's going to get scared. If the parent is calm and relaxed and say, we'll get you up, you're fine, this. So they'll learn how to deal with crisis. So a lot of how we deal with that is how we're brought up and the values and characters that were developed as a young person.
But yeah, that's good. So for you, when leadership feels heavy, right? You know, because oftentimes it's challenging, it's heavy. Where do you draw your strength and clarity from? I mean, tell us how you navigate through it from and what your perspective is on when things are a little bit more challenging than normal.
Well, Vicki, as I mentioned earlier, my father had a brain tumor and eventually led to his suicide. And when I was 16 years old is when he was diagnosed with his brain tumor. And it was very hard for me. It was a very dark time, very challenging. I was very angry. I was scared. I was nervous. I was unreliable. I was angry. I was angry at God. I was angry at my mother. I was like, why aren't you? Because my mother had seven children. There was the seven children. And my father was the breadwinner. And now we didn't have any money. We didn't know where the mortgage was going to be paid. And so it was very, very difficult growing up. And I was the oldest and being only 16. I literally dropped out of school. I stopped going to school. I wasn't going to graduate. And then one day, I had been drinking and doing drugs and just really not a good space. And then one day my grandparents came over and were telling my parents, mostly my mother, because my father was not thinking straight, that we were going to be split up in our families, living with different uncles and aunts. And my youngest brother came up to me and grabbed my legs and said, "I don't want to go. I don't want to go." He was crying. And my other brothers and sisters were looking at me like, "What am I going to do?" And here I was out hanging out with my friends, not going to school, drinking, doing drugs. Like, it kind of checked me as a human being, as the oldest of seven children. And at that point, I turned my life around, decided to finish school, get a job, help my mom. I graduated and I set the example, and all my other brothers and sisters finished school and got college degrees. And I always remember that. So when you say, what keeps me grounded, I remember that. And then eventually when I went to work for the United Farm Workers Union, I saw people take responsibility for poor people. I saw a lot of white people, a lot of white people from Stanford and Harvard and Yale, and they were helping immigrant farm workers. And I thought, wow, if they can do that, I can do that. And so I went to spend time in the United Farm Workers after I finished college, because being of service to others was important to me. I had done that as a eldest son of my brothers and sisters, and I wanted to do it in a professional way. So I think the experience that I had as a young 16-year-old, being responsible for my six siblings and supporting my mother and having a disabled schizophrenic father, I think that keeps me grounded.
You know, I often say, you know, thank you for sharing that, because I know that was deeply personal. I often say that sometimes the greatest challenges that we go through will birth some of the biggest blessings that we don't understand at the time. So at the time, we're just trying to survive, or we're just trying to press through, but not really knowing that is what God is using to equip us to be the version, the best version of us that He wants us to be. Go ahead, Victor.
We in our organization, we see challenges are resources. They're not roadblocks. They're not detours. A challenge in your life needs to become a resource. When you get hurt, when something happens to you, it's a wound. You have a wound on your arm. It's bleeding. It's not. But when it becomes a scar, then you can use it as a resource. You can use that experience for the future. So challenges are a good thing. What do they say? You learn more from losing than by winning.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, and again, I mean, some of the oftentimes life can be, you know, I talk to, you know, people today and it's like, oh, how are you? Oh, life is lifey. It's okay. You know, this too is going to pass. It's not going to be doom and gloom, and something out of this, there's something either you need to learn or something that you need to grow through. And if you're not coming out of a storm, you're going into one. You just learn how to handle it with more grace, you know, than you would have originally. So, you know, stop looking at challenging times as, you know, it's the end of, you know, everything. When we talk about grit, right? How would you define grit to leaders that are really trying to understand, you know, where they are, what their purpose is going to be, and how they navigate through things that are different and not just simply pushing through like we're talking about?
Well, I think relationships are really important to keep people grounded. You know, Warren Buffett always says that the most important decision you can make in your life is your partner. And so while you might have a romantic partner in a spouse or, you know, partner in life, a partner could be your siblings, a partner could be your neighbor, a partner could be a coworker, a partner could be a dear friend. So I think that's what allows you to develop your grit, the relationships you have. You know, many times when we discuss the leadership development programs that we have at our organization, we say there's three things that make it work. One is the content of the work. So what's the subject matter? What are we going to learn? Secondly is the experience around that. What type of experiential opportunities are there to learn the content? And the third thing, which is the most important, is the relationships. You know, there's the constructivism theory of learning, where you build on top of what you know and what you're interested in. It's called constructivism. It's a theory of learning, of education. There's something called social constructivism, and that's doing the same thing, but with other people. And so constructivism with other people is social constructivism, and that's the best way to learn, to learn with other people so that you can get other ideas and other experiences as part of your vocabulary, as part of your repertoire. And so what gets people through challenges are relationships. I remember in our organization about 7 years ago, we lost half our board members, half of them. We have 7 board members. We lost 4. It's a little bit more than half. And those first 4 were very, very knowledgeable on water, extremely knowledgeable. And they left in February. The end of March was our annual conference. And the staff was like, oh my gosh, how are we going to do this conference when these 4 experienced people are gone and they're not going to be helpful? Well, what I started doing is I started calling our leadership, our volunteer leadership, and created a phone call in about 3 days with about 8 or 9 of them and asked them, how should we do this conference? How could this conference be developed? How could it be implemented? How can we make sure it's successful? So I went to the relationships that I had. I lost 4 board members, but I went to another set of people, brought them to the table, had a conversation with them. It was one of the most successful conferences we've ever had. So always going to your relationships will win. I always believe that people are right. The people are always right. What leadership responsibility for that is, you have to make sure that they're educated. You have to make sure that they have the information, because partial information is dangerous. Full information is powerful. So the leadership's responsibility is to make sure that the people that they're working with are fully informed of the conditions, how it started, how it happened, and what the solutions can be.
Man, this conversation has been a powerful reminder that leadership at its best is not just strategic, it's human. It asks us to care deeply and act courageously and stay accountable to something bigger than ourselves. Victor, thank you so much for joining me and sharing your insight and the conviction in your heart. And thank you for joining me on Leading with Grace, Grit, and Greatness. I'm Vikita Poindexter. Until next time, keep leading with grace, keep standing with grit, and never forget that greatness is built on how we serve, how we show up, and how we honor the people entrusted into our care. You take care. Have a good day.